Keep the frequency clear.
But guess what? You don't get to tell me when I can stop speaking. Well,
tune in to Queering the Air.
Report on trans and intersex issues with accuracy, dignity, and respect.
Yes, ma'am.
Change the narrative rather than combat the narrative.
Yes, queen.
I know who I am. Took me 20 years to get here. I'm not going to let some idiot senator destroy that.
3CR Community Radio.
Our stories are best told when we are the ones telling them. It helps combat the perpetuation of stereotypes, misinformation, and lies.
The TGDNB culture is valid, critical, vital, and vibrant.
I discovered in the face of overwhelming prejudice and persecution an incredible strength through being fiercely fabulous.
Welcome to Queering the Air, Sundays from 3 to 4 on 3CR. 3CR is proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Yes, welcome one, welcome all. It is Madison Moffat. This is Queering the Air. It's on 3CR 855 AM on the radio dial, also via digital, and also known as the digital audio band for those techies out there, and online through 3cr.org.au/streaming, or alternately 3cr.org.au, Queering the Air. So, what we have today, well, I'm going to be playing a panel of writers that was at the Trans Book Festival. This one featured First Nations writers. This was played about 5 weeks ago on Trans Creator Radio, but this is an edited version so that we can fit it into the hour. I think it's worth a second spin, and the Trans Creator Radio folks and the Queering the Air folks don't necessarily overlap, and so I think that let's spread the benefit. Again, this is the First Nations panel of the Trans Book Festival 2026 that happened in late April.
This next panel has been guest curated by the incredible Leigh Maloney, and it's all about being an ancestor, being beyond the limitations of time, space, and the material world. First Nations writers and poets Ali Alitzi, Moira, and Leigh Maloney will yarn with Chair Jazz Money about what it means to be a trans ancestor, the responsibility of truth telling with ink, and how black love transcends all expectations. Come on up. Jazz Money is a multi-award-winning queer Wurundjeri poet and artist. Jazz is the author of the acclaimed poetry collections How to Make a Basket and Mark the Dawn, as well as two illustrated children's books. As a visual artist, Jazz works with poetics to create immersive, storied spaces. Their writing and art has been presented, performed, and published around the world. Please make them all welcome.
Thanks so much, Eli. Yirrdu Murrungnindiga, Jazz Yuanadi, Wiradjuri and Albaladu, Wurundjeri Woiwurrung Nyurrumbung Warana. Mandangu Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, Mandangu Nyurrumbung, Injimara, Mandangu. Thank you all. I have just extended my gratitude to the elders and custodians of Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country, where we are so lucky to gather, and to acknowledge all First Nations mob. In the room today, we're going to be having a conversation that, extends forwards and back and is always situated on country, with country, and moving forward with care and reciprocity. First to my stage right, Moira, is a Yorta Yorta, Bunurong, and Jewish transsexual writer, poet and artist living on unceded Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country. Sir work uses the genres of speculative fiction and horror to interrogate settler colonialism and focus on queer blackness and black queerness, collective liberation and ancestral futurity. When Z isn't writing, you can find him yelling about invertebrates on Instagram at Remulus. Central on the panel, we have Leigh Malone. Leigh is a gender-fluid storyteller belonging to the Gumbangia and Gungangi nations and is South Sea Islander. They are the author of Weaving Us Together and published in Australian Poetry Journal, Cordite Review and Red Room Poetry and more. To the furthest stage right, Ali Alizi is a Yugambeh editor at Magabala Books. Based in Rubibi Broome, he is a writer, researcher and anti-racism educator who has been published by outlets such as the Sydney Review of Books, Liminal Magazine, The Lifted Brow, The Saturday Paper, The Sydney Morning Herald, ABC News, SBS and Overland. As an editor, he has worked with UN Magazine, Archer Magazine and Liminal Magazine. He was the inaugural writer in residence at M Pavilion for 2018, and in 2022 he was one of the 10 fellows for the Judith Nielsen Institute's Long Lead program for long-form non-fiction. Please give them all a stirring round of applause. I'm going to ask Moira to start us off with a poem, which is really beautiful and you're really lucky.
This poem is called Carnivores in Love. Your mattress, floor a soft bed mother. Little bright suns flooding in from the city. We're burrowed into each other. Two fossils wrapped around another. I say, erode me. Carve rough valleys with water and wind. Bury me under the soil of your mound. I am begging for a mouthful. I cannot introduce you to my family. We share names like flowers, each stem a different songline. Thorn and nectar alike, colours varied. Andrews, Rodoni, Baker, Charles, Williams, Briggs. Where from and who from, the same question. The papaya of your core. Nah, gammon phrasin'. Like, you disrupt a room, stance red gum staunch, expose the tender flesh of your underbelly, peel back layers of sharp edges, canoe carving, two person. Lie in our nest all day and drink from your mouth, water holes along my neck, swamp round yours. Remind us where from and where we're going. It's no problem. I love it. I am begging for a mouthful.
Thank you. I love a sexy country poem. But there's that line in there about where from and where we're going. And I thought that was a good place to start this sort of conversation. And to really ask each of you how you respond to that sort of prompt. Where from and where you going, and whose legacies are you building upon, and who are you building them for? And maybe, because we've just had your reading, we're going to start, Ali.
I just feel really lost in that poem at the moment. That was really good. Thank you so much for starting us in that way. I think that it's really important to begin with sensuality, because I think that bodily feeling and complexity maybe is something that has always been a part of our storytelling, but I do think that there was a certain level of conservatism in the white writing world that maybe prevented that expression from coming out for, like, I imagine, like, the first half of the 20th century. When I think about where we've come from, I think about people like Rudyard Nunakul and some of those early poets who issued those directives to Aboriginal self-determination movements through poetry and the language of protest that spoke through poetry at that time. So I think, yeah, when you ask that, Jazz, I think about lineage in writing, in written form, the importance of us as Aboriginal writers to know our history and our genealogy, and to look to the people that are still living, but also the people that have gone and the things that they left behind, and to really critically and closely examine them. from our own 21st century lens, not to reject them or unnecessarily problematize them, but to embrace and understand them as well, and understand where they came from, and to really sit within those histories. So yeah, I think about some of the incredible writers that have come before us when you ask that, and also about, yeah, the importance of speaking to the older generations and really listening to and embracing their perspectives and understanding them within their context, and also the importance of intergenerational contact, both written and oral and personal. But Lei, I mean, you've written a young adult novel. Do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Stunning handover.
I mean, I'd like to know more specifically what messages you'd like to impart to people that are younger than us through your writing, and how you do that in your work.
Jazz, when I hear, like, where you're from, I immediately, like, imagine, like, a Murray sister girl being like, oh, where are you from? And then I say, oh, I'm from Yarrabah. And, like, that positioning of yourself, of where you're from, and who you belong to, and it's like, you know, I belong to them, they belong to me, I belong to this place, and we find relationality through one another, and we start building, like, the common ground and the connection to country. So we are building a map, you know, like a map of ancestorship in a way. And I think it's like the revitalization kind of even, like, you know, songlines and being able to say things out whilst we're walking country. It's such a beautiful thing. But that's what came to mind when you asked that. I guess I really predominantly write for, like, queer young black fellas. And I just want them to know that they're loved, always. And they always have a place. And I guess thinking about, like, this panel, we have such a expectation on us to be something both, I hate the word, but, like, ancient, and we come from time immemorial, but we're also seen as something new in terms of transness. And I'm like, it's actually not like that. We've always been trans, we've always been queer, we've always been here. And just because those stories weren't given the respect or they were erased doesn't mean that they don't exist and that we don't exist right now. And we're currently the ancestors who have to take up that role and be the example. When I was thinking about this panel too, I thought back to this question that I got asked of, like, how do I want to be remembered? And when I answered that, it was actually at a Crew Youth Council event. But when I answered it back then, I said, I don't care if I'm remembered. I just want them to live benefiting from my actions. But who I am now, I actually don't want that. I want them to remember my name. I want them to remember that I am non-binary. I want them to remember that I'm trans. I want them to remember that I'm queer. I want them to remember that I love them, even though they don't even exist yet. And I love my ancestors and my country. And when they hear my name, I want them to be able to brag about me. So it's changed in that way. And I always are constantly thinking about, you know, my nibblings and the people who get to brag about me. Yeah.
I think for me, it is also thinking a lot about not just literal family lines and literal family genealogy, but also the community in the place that I grew up in, and the community that my father and my grandmother and my grandfather came from, and who they are and what they looked like. And, you know, thinking about all the uncles and aunties I know who are also queer and who are also trans, whether they were openly so or not, or whether it was just open secret kind of moment. I think because of particular family things, that's where I go for a lot of my strength, as far as, like, well, that's where I come from, and they're who I come from, and they are who I grew up with and grew up around. And I think that also absolutely influences how the kind of ancestor I want to be, but not just as an ancestor, but also the kind of elderly person I want to be. I think about being able to look at, you know, the older people we have in our community, and whether they're trans or queer or not, just the joy and the relief and the love that I get to look upon another black fella, and they have wrinkles and grey hair, and that they have stories, and that they are storied, and that they are beloved by their community. And I want that to be me when I'm 60, 70, getting up there, fingers crossed. Like, I want that to be, like, some, you know, young black fella, yeah, being able to have my turn for them to look at me and be like, oh, I actually get to reach that. And I think that for me especially, I grew up in a country town. It did feel a lot of the time like I was the only trans black fella around. I think to be almost the thing another young black fella can look up and be like, oh, well, actually, no. There's this person and this person and this person and that person, and that's where I can drag my cultural trans identity from and my strength from.
I love that because you're pointing at this thing that I really see overlapping in black communities and also in queer communities, with this real knowledge that aging is a privilege, right? And I see so often in like the dominant sort of Western framework that we live within, people fearing getting older. And I think that is like such a rot in this society that we don't care and acknowledge and respect the way that we should our older folk. But then I also see in, you know, our communities, in queer communities and in black communities, people being like, oh, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward, like I gotta earn that status. And then when I'm there, those grannies, they're gonna be making me the tea. So I love that you brought them into the space. I'd love to ask for a reading from one of you two, and you've both been a little bit secretive about what it's going to be.
Anyways, this is something I just wrote literally in the back room there. It's more of a letter to my descendants. This is something, you know, maybe throw an envelope and they open it up in like 80 years, and I'm not here, hopefully. I'd be 100 something. I don't want that. Okay. And I'm gonna change it and as I go, just so you know, so on the fly. I dream you're happy, truly happy. I dream country knows you and holds you. I dream English is not your first language, nor your second. I dream you're confident of yourself and you know who you are and where you come from without missing a beat. I dream you know what love is and not just the type of love you read about in books. I want you to know love between your family, your country, your kindred, your friends. I want you to know what love is. I dream you're smart, smarter than I will ever be. I dream your summers are spent at the beach and your winters are in the mountains. I dream you're well fed, but you're never forced to eat. I dream you don't recognize the smell of alcohol or sterile hospitals. I dream you're beautiful, like the sun through gum trees or the sparkle of a river surface. I dream you smell flowers every day when you get up and go for a walk in the morning. I dream you are well educated and have every possible opportunity to be. I dream you go to libraries and read so many books. I dream you go to my library. I dream you brag about me a lot. I dream you have an entire wall filled with the ancestors who you point to and you know all their names. I dream you've been to your island's home and you know your people from there. I dream you know the salt water and the fresh water and the waters of your mother. I dream that the sands of time are on your side forever and always. I dream endlessly about you.
Yo, 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 you're listening to Cultural Kinetics with me, Curly, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. I'm here to present to you a smorgasbord of cultural flavour from most genres, cultures and backgrounds, giving you what I got, much more. Kick the beat in, selector. Yeah.
Well, I've walked these streets, a virtual stage, it seemed to me.
iPlus Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. iPlus Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. iPlus Pride is especially keen to hear from multi-gender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to iPlus Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at biplusprideVic.org.au, email info@biplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual. 3CR, here to stay.
I cry easily. Don't worry.
Jazz.
No, that was incredible. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that writing process there, hon?
I literally just made that up. You know, I was looking at the roof.
No, I know, but that's, is that something? I saw what you were doing. But is that like how you write, actually? Like, do you catch it as it comes down and write? Or do you labour and research and, like, what is your writing process? Because that was incredible to witness.
But yeah, no, I guess it depends what I'm writing. Like, that was really easy because it was to someone, and I know exactly what experiences I want my descendants to have and what kind of expectations I have about myself towards them. But yeah, in terms of, like, my writing process, Evie Aralewin actually called me a psychopath the other day because I showed her my workbook, and that's for a fantasy trilogy I'm currently working on. As for when I wrote Reading Lost Together, I wrote it in psychosis in about 3 weeks for the first draft, and that was insane. Don't recommend. But yeah, it literally just comes to me and I have those yawns. And when it comes to poetry, sometimes I just write words that come out all over the page. There's no linear thing. And then I kind of just put them together. If it makes sense, it makes sense. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And honestly, I don't really like my poetry. Other people like it. I don't like it.
I was actually just gonna ask, maybe you guys know the answer to this, but I heard a rumor that, and I don't know, if that's how Sam Watson wrote the Kadacha song in like 3 days with no sleep and like just really like went into the trance state and just wrote it out. And it's like one of the more iconic and strange.
I've never heard that, but that makes sense.
Yes. I've been trying to write for pleasure lately rather than write to a mission or like write to writing deadlines or for money, because for a long time I did write journalism and more commercial nonfiction, which has a brief and a demand. And I think I started trying to write more intuitively and more socially. So I joined a First Nations writers group in Broome, in Rubibi on Yarra country where I live, which is mostly made up of screenwriters and filmmakers, but some fiction writers also, but kind of a collective-based experience where in order to be part of the group, you have to have a project. And so I made my project writing erotica. So I was inspired by people like Joan Nestle and some native poetry writers, like erotic poetry writers from overseas, as well as some of what Ellen Van Nieman is doing with their fiction writing too, and what Melissa Lukashenko did. In some of her, not fully focused on erotic writing as a genre, but like involving erotic scenes and trying to write with some intention and some planning, but actually just write with more intention just to center like sensual and erotic and bodily experiences for, and I did that through, some of it is through interviewing. So I like to use interview with consent to reproduce it as fiction to understand, like, because I think having that input from other people is really necessary to writing. And it began with one of my really close friends who is a poet and a fiction writer and an essayist and an academic, a literary scholar. We used to write erotic stories to each other on, I forget what the platform was, but we were blogging, but like just to each other, like letter writing almost. And I started using that format to write like erotic fiction. But I think I find conversation really productive and also group dynamics really productive for writing. I don't know about, I mean, you sound like you've had a very solo experience, but you also involved other people in the process of visioning as well?
Well, I think it's very different for poetry. I think it is quite sensory and bodily and emotions first. Like, I know there's a craft to poetry, but for me it comes later when I butcher it to death. It's not very structured. I do pluck it from air and from earth, but my speculative writing and my horror writing is quite different. I do, like, that is very, a lot more rigid. It's very planned out. You know, I know beginning, middle, end. I know the characters. I know what I'm hoping the reader is going to be able to pick up on. I know what a particular reader might not be able to pick up on. That's, like, planned out. but yeah, my poetry is quite free, quite fluid.
Thank you. I want to pick up, Ali, on what you were just getting at there with the writing erotica, and I want to pull this into the whole conversation because I feel like there is an element of the political in showing a sensual body, and coming from, like, our intersecting communities, that's a political act, and I want to ask you more about that.
I think as a trans person and a queer person, as well as an Aboriginal person, there were obviously moments in pretty recent history where images of our sexuality and bodies were censored and prohibited. And so I think that's quite political still, even though it doesn't feel like we live in a very censorship-heavy context sometimes when it comes to sex now. That's still part of our history, so I think that it is, like, pretty important to continue to assert that element of human life as a writer, and to do it with care and ethics and thought. And I think knowing the history of Christianization in the Aboriginal community as well, that's something that I think it's really present still in our communities, and the impact of the sex negativity that a lot of our young queer and trans mob grew up with is still very damaging and disconnects us from our bodies. And it actually has, like, a really life-threatening impact, I think, on a lot of people. And not just life-threatening in terms of, like, the mental health weight and the suicide rate in our young people, which is really real and present, but also in terms of quality of life, I think, and quality of social life and community life. I think sex is such a huge part of that we need to really, like, acknowledge and value and, like, reconsider as a community. So I think that's why it feels important to, and I think as a young person, even the smallest glimpses of reading, like, positive erotica could make a huge impact on me. So I find it really valuable not to focus on that exclusively, but to bring it back into what we have in printed, written words.
Yeah, in my work, I've looked a lot into cinema spaces and representations of black bodies and queer bodies in the context of this place. Seeing those as sites of violence in our popular culture and media representations is something that we're almost inured to, right? It's so easy to find representations of our bodies as place where violence occurs, and actually to find representations where love and joy is celebrated, where sexuality and sensuality are uplifted, is such a balm. But I want to put in to you guys as well, like, how does the body make itself present in your writing, and is that something that feels intentional or political or intuitive? How would you respond to that?
I think all of my stories pretty much deal with the body, both in a non-erotic and erotic context. I think as a black transsexual person, you know, the way I have felt about my body, the way it has been politicized by an outside presence, how colonial violence has been done to it, but also the way that community love and queer love has been practiced on it and within it. Spicy. It, to me, is very, very political, because I grew up in a body that started to change and changed for the worse. To me, it changed for the worse. Like, that's not everyone's experience, but it made me deeply uncomfortable, and then it made me hate it. Not even the way it changed, but the way other people's perception of my body made, as it changed, as it transformed in puberty, made me hate it, and made me hate this body that previously carried me through river water effortlessly, that carried me running through shrub effortlessly, that was the body my family hugged, that was the body that I fed food into and enjoyed, was now a body that I looked at and I found revolting and hideous. And I was told it was revolting and hideous and monstrous. But at the same time, a cat came out as trans at 12. And from that point onwards, it was also asserting that I had a reality and I had a body and I had an ideal body, quote unquote, that I wanted, and bodily autonomy that I wanted, that I also, in a weird way, at the same time that I was hating myself, I was also committing this extreme act of love, because I was saying, no, this body will look the way I want it to, and you won't let me have it, you know, until I'm 18, I guess, but I am going to have it, and I will take it if I have to, and I will do it alone, and I did do it alone. But that was this strange kind of contradictory act of love. But when I moved to the city and I actually kind of had a much larger queer, particularly trans and trans mob community, it was no longer me having to kind of grin and bear through my body and loving my body. I had other people loving that body and showing me care and affection and desire for something that had caused and had so much violence inflicted upon it. It was instead shown this tenderness, this adoration. And so I think, yeah, that's a big part of my work and a very intentional part of my work, because I don't think I can separate it from my transsexual, black, you know, disabled experience.
Thanks, Moira. Oh my gosh, thank you for sharing that. The body, I come at it from a different angle. I sit somewhere happily on like the arrow ace spectrum, represent. So I connect to my body differently in a way. I think of the time I felt like inner peace for the first time. And it was when I had my back on the sand, on the middle, like at the beach, under the waves. And I look up and I could see the sunlight just reflecting through and down. Everything was just so beautiful. And I just felt so content there. And, you know, I keep coming back to, like, the water metaphor, but that's where I can, like, the gender fluidity comes in. But I definitely see myself as, like, an extension of country. And, you know, the whole thing, we are country, country is us. My body's very much like that. You know, my veins are rivers. My heart is a tectonic plate. My feet are rocks connected to the ground. My hair is, like, stringy box. I don't see the difference between looking after myself and looking after country in that way. And I definitely see it as an extension of who I am and where I come from, in terms of people always say I look like my family. Like, I look like a Flanders, I look like Maloney. Like, when they see me, they don't just see me. You know, they always see my nan and my ancestors and my nibblings. Like, I didn't meet my dad until I was like 7. My biological father, I was adopted to family. But it was the most beautiful moment, because we looked at each other and we recognized each other, and every time I think about it, I just think it's the ancestors looking back at us. But he looked at me and immediately like, yes, that's my kid. You look exactly like my niece. Her name's Jasmine. I looked exactly like her. And when I looked at Dad, I just knew that was my father. I don't know how, I don't know why, but I recognized him. And in that term, it's like looking in a mirror, you know? So I see the body so many like multifaceted things, and at the same time it's like comes back to like the spiritual aspect of, you know, a lot of people ask the difference between like what's the spirit and what's the body, and I'm like, actually they're all very connected, because that's like just how much the body is built around your spirit, and your spirit interacts with your body. And your ancestors that like have to give so much permission for your spirit to be out of your body, etc. That's going on to a different level there. But yeah, it's all interconnected, and we are country at the end of the day.
And Ali, I'm wondering if your piece of writing that you're going to read feels like it could be introduced to the space now.
Yeah, definitely. This is a poem, a very short poem that I wrote about fishing. Wet line, wound around wrist, a jet ski drifting, a noise, a hovercraft, mystically interlinked fingers. I have bluebird fever. I can catch 3 at once on this thread. Spangled spike, 3-pronged, thick mud up to his waist. I'm needy too.
You're listening to Queering the Air on 3CR 855 AM on the digital Also available via a digital audio band and online through 3cr.org.au/streaming. And you're listening to the Transcendent First Nations Panel. That was the name assigned to it that I could not recall when I first introduced it. And it was held specifically on Sunday, the 19th of April at the Wheeler Centre, and it was part of the Trans Book Festival. So you're listening to writers and poets Ali Elitzi, Moira and Leigh Maloney yarn with their chair, who is Jazz Money, about what it means to be a trans ancestor, the responsibility of truth-telling with ink, and how black love transcends all expectations. So we will get back to that First Nations panel in just a few moments. But DJ T-Boy, what are people listening to?
Hey there, you're listening to Clearing the Air, coming to you live and direct on 855 AM or live streaming, man, that's cool, on 3cr.org.au/streaming, or you can hear it on demand, man, that's just wild. Or not. It's all cool, man. It's all good.
Ah, yes, that's what we're listening to. Thank you, DJ T-Boy, and thank you, 3CR Chicken.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars Prison broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2026. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 6th through to Friday the 10th of July. We'll take you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Phyllis Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Loddon Prison, Marganite Correctional Centre, and Western Plains Correctional Centre. There'll be stories, songs, opinions, and poems from the men and women inside while connecting with culture and community. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and streaming via our website or the Community Radio Plus app. Head to 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2026 for more information.
This country's black future is a fire.
All of the dreams that I had were suddenly falling down. Be fast and slow.
Lovely. So that was Mookie, who's a queer Nam Melbourne-based artist. And this week they unveiled their debut EP, Trampoline. Now let's hear more from the Trans Book Festival's First Nations panel. Yes, let's do it. A one and a two. And a three.
So I fully socially and legally, I guess, transitioned when I moved to Broome in 2022. And I wrote that poem about the blue bone, which is like a really highly valued fish in the Kimberley. It's not really like a lot of the First Nations people in Kimberley, I feel like it's not a very gendered act to go fishing for blue bone, but it's like an act that I associate with like providing and being a provider back to the family or back to your social group. It's like a really celebrated thing to catch one. And I wrote that poem. I'm really bad at fishing. I'm awful at fishing, actually. I'm pretty useless. And I think I wrote it about feeling dependent and reliant on other people. When I was feeling vulnerable about transitioning and relying on mostly First Nations women around me to look after me and defend me all the time and like validate me socially and give me the social recognition and that I was needing to survive, and not just survive but live really well at the time. So that's the space that I was writing that in, when I was also being taken on a lot of fishing trips and feeling like I was not contributing anything. Which is a vulnerable, you know, it's a vulnerable position to write from and to sit in, but also like it gives you a perspective of like people will catch you and also like pat you on the head and like be like, you're valid, you're okay. Like it's okay. You can be here and watch.
Do you write a lot of poetry when you're processing the world?
No, I don't. I usually, no, I don't. I actually never do.
Do you have a hunch about why that one came to you as a poem?
Somebody asked me for it, like asked me for a poem. And so I was like focusing really hard. You know when someone gives you like a deadline? That's why writers group.
It often helps, I find.
Yeah, well, I think about like the artist collective Proper Now and how when they started, that's an artist group that was based in Brisbane of Aboriginal people. And when they first started, they were like really demanding on each other. And they're like, you can't be part of the collective unless you're making art at a certain frequency. Like you have to produce work. Otherwise you're kicked out because they said no passengers. And that's why I think writers groups are, like, First Nations writers groups are so important for me to produce work. Otherwise, I just will hide and not do anything. But the demand is really important to prompt you to be not only working, but to be making good work. So I was working really hard because someone asked me for the poems, and I was, like, stressing out about it for, like, a month. And then that's one of them that I came up with.
Now, I wanted to ask you all this question around drawing strength from living in intersecting communities and, you know, as queer, trans, gender diverse mob, so much of the joy in my life comes from living within those communities. And I wanted to ask you as writers how you think those intersections inform your writing. And editors. but yeah, do you feel the presence of community in your reading and writing?
I think yes, because like I told you, like when I started writing erotica, it was with a very, very good friend who also gave me advice that when you do your writing, you should imagine the audience is like your best friend who will understand you like automatically. And that really freed me from some internal self-judgment about the audience that I was writing for. So I think, yeah, I find I don't cope well, survive well when I'm writing on my own. And I have to imagine that people are in the room almost with me, helping me out sometimes.
I'm kind of the same, Jazz. I can't imagine not being any of the aspects of my identity. Like, they all feed into each other in the most beautiful way. Like, a lot of people will be like, oh, isn't that hard, and being, you know, trans or being black. And I'm just like, it's actually the best thing ever. Like, I wake up every day and thank God I'm Aboriginal. I draw so much strength from just being able to say that too and look around at my community members and my peers and see how beautiful and smart and like just grounded they are. You know, the community I was sitting here with you on stage, like this is a very, very beautiful opportunity. And it's not something that happens a lot. And when it does, it's like magic just happens. But yeah, I just can't imagine. And also it's not like still either. I'm still figuring out parts of myself that I've not yet grown into. I still see myself as very emerging. And I just imagine my craft like getting better and better every time I write, because I discover something new about myself, you know? And I keep growing with my skill set, like as a person, in every aspect of my personhood.
I think, yeah, similar to what you were saying, I can't avoid drawing from, you know, my queer and trans and black communities. I think as far as drawing strength and kind of drawing love and then embodying that into my work, or at the very least embodying that into my drive to write. I think for me, I've always, up until again I moved to the city, always felt far more strength in being a black fella and my community there than I have in my experience of being transsexual, purely just for like personal growing up reasons. I could not fathom being anything other than I cannot fathom being anything other than a black fella, and growing up around other black fellas and growing up, you know, in community around culture, around our contemporary culture that we have. And I think for me as a transsexual person, like feeling like I'm drawing strength from trans community didn't really happen until, yeah, I did get to leave home and go to the city here and actually interact with, like I said, other transsexual people, other queer people, but especially other queer and trans mob, and heal those parts of me, and then want to heal back as well and support and love back those parts of me that felt like they were all covered in cracks, you know, like, or like a tree that's been in the drought area too long and it's about to fall apart. I got to have that kind of big rain come and strengthen those roots again.
That feels like a really elegant segue, actually, because you had one more poem that you were going to read for us. And I think that that would meet this moment really nicely.
I wrote this poem after I finally healed from top surgery last year. My top surgery was quite traumatic. Everything went wrong. and I did in fact have to be revived twice in hospital. So very fun. And I remember when I finally got to the, you know, the extended healing phase, kind of finished, I remember I took off my shirt and I looked at my incision scar and I looked at my chest and I thought, this is horrible. This is disgusting. And then I stood in the mirror for a little longer and I think I was kind of disassociated, but I was staring at it and I was like, it kind of looks like a sand dune on the scar, you know? And the ripples on it kind of look like when I've seen, you know, red bellies, or when I remember seeing red bellies kind of slowly make their way past, you know, as you're stepping away from them and climbing up a tree to avoid them. While being growled at by a nan. And I thought, maybe it's not ugly. Maybe it is just having country deeply embodied into me. And so this poem is called White Fellas Ain't Got Medicine Like This. Two bottle brush plucked. Wattle bed come river glory. Spear turned inwards. Hair creeping upward across stomach like nodding salt bush. Oyster curves outwards and points sharp, like granite cleaved open. The flat trunk of my chest scarred, gently rippled, Kumara sand hill bumpy, a violent red slashed still. As if red belly slithered across the incision, just to say hi.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. And that presence again of, in everything that has been read on this stage today, the presence of inextricable country and position within country as country is so beautifully tangible in that. And I've been thinking while we've been having this yarn a lot about Dr. Sandy O'Sullivan, Wiradjuri trans non-binary academic and legend, who I'm going to do like the worst synopsis of Sandy's academic work, which is essentially so often as blackfellas we're sort of asked to prove queerness in our community in some way, this sort of demand of like, well, what were queer blackfellas doing pre-colonization, or did you exist, or what were trans blackfellas, you know, you're this modern recent thing. And Sandy so brilliantly has written to the fact that here is the evidence. It's not written down in books. It's our bodies, and we are the descendants of ancestors who have lived here since always, who have been trans and queer here since always, and the proof that you have is the fact that we're still here. And I feel like you have all brought that beauty of presence, you know, like a lived-in body that is part of country to the stage. And so I just wanted to bring Dr. Sandy into this space because I have felt their presence a lot. We've been yarning and their academic integrity that has inspired a lot of my writing as well. And I wondered if anyone wanted to respond to that before, you know, as we make our way to closing this session.
Sandy O'Sullivan is a legend. The literal goat. But as I was, again, just sitting here too, being in space, and going back from what you said, like moving to the city and recognizing our elders, but also our queer elders. Ali, you're that to me too. And I see Elijah Money over there too, who's also very much my trans older brother, and how much we influence each other and also inspire each other. It's like, yeah, what you said, Jazz, in terms of like we're here and we see each other in ourselves, well, we see ourselves in each other, and it's like mirrors, and we find each other naturally, I find. Like we have strings connected to us and we just gravitate towards one another.
I feel like Lay summarized it. Yeah, I think this kind of feeling of queer blackfellows, trans blackfellows, feeling one another's presence and kind of drawing one another's presence, and the joy and the gift of being able to look at one another, like, I see your spirit. You don't have to justify yourself to me. You don't have to explain yourself to me. You don't need to give me a reasoning. You don't need to prove yourself to me. I know you. And I think that that's a really, really beautiful thing that I think that as black queer and black trans people, we should consider our superpower of being able to hold such a space. But also I think being able to display such a level of embodiment of country and the way that country changes and shifts. That is our superpower. That is what makes us special.
Yes, and so this was the Transcendent First Nations panel, recorded on the 19th of April at the Wheeler Centre as part of the Trans Book Festival. I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to play it for the Queering the Air audience. It was previously recorded for the Trans Creator Radio, so a bit of a plug there. We are going to be continuing to play a range of panels on Trans Creator Radio from the Trans Book Festival. We've already played a few. There's a few more to come. So if you're interested in this type of content, please go to the Trans Creator Radio page. So we need to wrap up here. Next up is the Salaam Radio Show. Love, love, love. And what can I say about the Salaam Radio Show? Well, the first thing I can say is that Mushti's looking at me through the window as if to say, when are you going to get out of the studio? And I think that, you know, that's a fair question. It's a fair question. Actually, because we're on delay, she won't actually be able to hear the fact that I said this until about 15 seconds. Ah, there we are. There's the look. Okay, so I'm now going to sign off, and I'm signing off with a track called Liar by Tian. Now, Tian is a wonderful Mianjin-based singer, and they've released an EP, the name of which is Life is Weird. And I will see you next week.